Senate Committee on Emergency Veterans Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
This little vignette was written by Sergeant Jocelyn Proano, a U.S. Marine Corps. I grew up in New Jersey in the ghetto. I was always getting in trouble, getting into fights, and so I got expelled from school. My brother was the one who actually inspired me to join the military. He had joined the Army. His recruiter said they had a youth challenge program and you could get your GED. So I did Army boot camp, and I loved it so much, living in a squad bay, going out PTing. It was just awesome, marching and all that. The Army was pretty cool, and then I started hearing about the Marines. All the movies, they're the most hardcore. I see that recruiter in dress blues, he looks so good. So I chased the recruiter down. Once I turned 17, I called that office and said, "Hey, sign me up. What do I got to do? Let's get going." And my mom wasn't all right with it, but she supported me. At least I'm not out on the streets getting in trouble. I just wanted to get out, get some adventure, travel, go out to war, do the whole nine. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Colleagues, members of the public, if you look at our work plan for today, the agenda, we're actually going to move very quickly through it. We have to do a committee bill introduction very quickly because we passed another law, which meant the law has changed while we're in mid-session and the governor signed it. So House bills, for example, that are dedicated to fallen heroes now have to be concurrent resolutions because the governor already signed the law, so we have to go back and redo some of the legislation that we did. And then after that, we're going to move down into the two public hearings and work sessions for Representative Witt's bills. But first, we're going to open a work session for the introduction of committee measures. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 4300 is available to the members today for introduction. It is the replacement concurrent resolution for House Bill 2981, which is scheduled today, which will not move. As the chair was referring, the 2981 uses a method of obtaining a memorial road sign that was just as of May 15th. The law was changed, so a concurrent resolution is required, so we quickly drafted an LC to cover House Bill 2981.
Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Bogus, I move that Legislative Concept 4300, dated May 13, 2015, be introduced as a committee bill.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanders has moved Legislative Concept 4300, dated 13 May 2015, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. With that, we're going to close the work session for committee measures and open a public hearing on 2645B.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2645B was previously heard on May 5th and was put on today's agenda pending possible amendment. There is a dash B5 amendment. This is the priority enrollment measure that requires public universities to give eligible veterans and service members enrollment priority over other students. The B5 amendment extends priority enrollment to include veterans and service members' dependents. The B5 has no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact, and we are also going to recommend or request rescission of the subsequent referral to education because we're going to run out of time and it could risk killing the bill.
And colleagues, if you remember here, this was Representative Witt's bill, and we asked if those closer dependents might be able to put into the bill. So all of the people that are in the educational community got together, went through this, and the B5 is the result of that. Is there anybody who wants to speak to this bill? I can see just a crowd of people racing forward here, Madam Vice Chair.
Are we in work session?
We're in work session. Public hearing and work session.
Okay. Chair Bokus, I move to adopt the B5s. Is that correct?
Yes.
Amendment dated 5/11/2015.
Vice Chair Mona Sanders moves to adopt the B5 amendment dated 5/11/2015. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Bokus, I move... You did say no opposition, right?
Right.
Okay. I move House Bill 2645B as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Education be rescinded.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanders moves House Bill 2645B as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Education be rescinded. Any opposition? Any discussion? sure everybody doesn't want to say anything here? We were confused last time. All right. So, no opposition with that. So ordered, I'll carry the bill. And Senator Courtney, for the record, is excused. And with that, we're going to close the public hearing and work session on 2645 and open one on House Joint Memorial 3. Representative Witt, if you would please.
Mr. Chair.
None of us have a clue what this is.
Members of the committee, HJM 3 was previously heard on May the 12th. We simply laid the background for the bill. It's the measure that urges Congress to enact legislation requiring stabilization of crude oil prior to transport.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, State Representative Brad Witt from Oregon's House District 31, appearing on behalf of House Joint Memorial 3. When typically we as legislators memorialize Congress, we ask them to do all kinds of grand and glorious things. Only the most noble causes do we ask for. In this instance, it's not only noble, but it's a beseeching request. Because it would, we're asking Congress to regulate railroads, and more specifically, the transportation of Bakken crude. More about that here in a moment. This bill asks that that Congress require the stripping of natural gas liquids from crude oil prior to that oil being transported. Bakken crude comes from a shale oil deposit. That shale is not only good at containing oil, it is extremely good at containing the natural gas liquid components as well. And not surprisingly, as a result, Bakken crude is highly, highly, highly explosive. And therein lies the reasons for asking it to be stripped out. Hard to believe that merely 5 years ago, there was virtually no crude oil that was being shipped by rail. Fast forward those 5 years, and we have 1.1 million barrels of crude oil being shipped by rail each and every day, about 70% of that being Bakken crude, the highly explosive kind. This oil travels an average of 1,600 miles from point of recovery to point of refinery. That's about halfway across the continent. And as it is doing so, as it's being transported by rail, it typically goes along flat areas. Not surprising. That is very economical and much easier for train traffic to do that. What defines these flat areas? Typically, they run along major waterways. Those are what have oftentimes created the flat areas. That also defines where many of our overland transportation networks travel. It also oftentimes defines many of our highly populated areas in our country. As a result, this oil is oftentimes traveling along some very environmentally sensitive areas and very highly human density, high density populated areas. Since February, since we came into the legislature, there have been four major train derailments of crude oil trains. Fortunately, none of these blew up like some of the trains of previous years when we've had some very, very fiery crashes. These derailments are occurring with an increasing frequency as the rate of oil shipments increases. As I pointed out at the beginning, we as a state are unable to regulate railroads, and that is the purpose for HJM 3 as the single largest and really the main crude oil terminal in the state of Oregon. My communities are seeing increasing frequency of oil shipments. I can tell you that without exaggeration, that many of the communities, virtually every single town in my district that is along the PNW rail line is built literally to the edge of those rail lines. Should there be a fiery explosion, it will be of catastrophic nature if it occurs within those communities. That is why it is so critically important that we do everything that we can to diminish the explosive level of these crude oil shipments. And because of that, I strongly urge your support of House Joint Memorial Number 3. Thank you, and would make myself available for whatever questions you might have.
Representative, I think what I'm hearing is that we're not talking about whether we like shipments or we don't like shipments. We're talking about making shipments safe.
Safer,
if
yes.
we're going to transport liquefied natural gas, it needs to be safe. If we're going to transport oil, it needs to be safe. And that's the issue at hand here is...
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Absolutely.
Comments, questions?
What is the safest way to transport crude oil then?
Certainly, trains have a relatively high safety record. It is a function oftentimes of the rail bed. But again, in the 13th legislative session, another memorial that I sponsored and you all fortunately, thank you, passed, required or asked Congress to require the utilization of new, improved train tank cars that are double-hulled. The valves are sealed. The valves actually all have coverings on them to protect those valves from leaking should there ever be any kind of impact situation. This is improved dramatically. Now we need to improve the safety of the cargo that's hauled in those rail cars.
Other questions?
I'm just thinking about the cost, and I assume that removing the flammable natural gas is pretty expensive, or is it?
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, it is a function of refining. That refining, whether it takes place at the point of recovery or the point of refining or where the refineries are located presently, it's literally the same process. It's a matter of when it takes place, where it takes place.
So are these refining places, follow-up?
Please.
Places at the place of origin, or would there have to be new refineries built at the place of origin?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mona Sanderson, that is one of the problems because there is not the refining capacity presently where the crude is obtained in the Bakken fields. It's presently being shipped unstripped, and those natural gas liquids are part of the oil that's going the average of 1,600 miles.
Thank you. any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
I think there's actually answers to your questions. If you want to roll over to next week, I think we can find the answers to your questions if you want to do that. Okay. With that, we'll roll HGM3 over next week. I think several people in the audience have the answers to these questions, so if you reach out to the committee, I'd appreciate it. If not, I will certainly reach out to you. With that, we're going to close HGM3, open a work session. We're now in work sessions, colleagues, of House Bill 2426A, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2426A was previously heard on May 12th. It updates the statutory authority and language for current 911 emergency systems consistent with modern communications technologies and declares emergency effective on passage. If I recall correctly, this is a military department bill. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no subsequent referral.
And if you recall, colleagues, all of the list of bills that are on work sessions, we had hearings last week. There wasn't any opposition. I've not heard anything from any of you. So we are in a work session at the moment.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 2426. Is that the one we're on? 24-
yes, ma'am.
26A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Madam Vice Chair moves 2426A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Vice Chair, you want to carry this one?
All right.
Okay. With that, we'll close the work session on 2426A. We're going to open a work session on 2919.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2919, also previously heard on the 12th, removes the requirement that the Office of Emergency Management coordinate with PSAPs and law enforcement to collect emergency contact information for cellular service providers. No revenue, minimal fiscal impact, no amendment, no subsequent referral.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 2919 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 2919 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any discussion, Senator Courtney?
No.
Okay. Is there any opposition to the bill? Seeing none, so ordered to the floor. Senator Courtney, it's your turn. 2919.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the work session on 2919. House Concurrent Resolution 22 will open a work session on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 22, previously heard on the 12th, memorializes Specialist Taylor Daniel Marks. No revenue impact, no fiscal, no subsequent referral.
Chair Boquist, I move HCR 22 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Amanda Sanders moves HCR 22 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion, committee members? Is there any opposition? Then so ordered. Please, for the record, note that Senator Winters is a co-sponsor. She will be asked to carry this concurrent resolution. And with that, we will close the work session on HCR 22 and open a work session on HGM 9.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJM 9 urges Congress to recognize a presumption of service connection for Agent Orange exposure of Vietnam War veterans serving at sea, around, or in the airspace above Vietnam. Also previously heard on the 12th, no revenue impact, no fiscal impact of subsequent reform.
Chair Boquist, I move HJM 9 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Mona Sanderson moves HGM 9 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Olson, you're up. House Joint Memorial 9, you okay with that?
No problem.
Okay, Senator Olson will carry that. Please have the record show that. We're going to close the work session on HGM 9 and open a, I'm looking here, public hearing, it says. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
On HGM. Okay. What are you here for?
14.
We're going to open a public hearing on HGM 14, if you would please, counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJM 14 urges Congress and the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to direct the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Portland Regional Benefit Office to release data regarding patient-centered community care program. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. The measure came out of House committee and off the House floor, both unanimously.
You're up.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, President Courtney, esteemed members of the committee. For the record, my name is Newt Buehler. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And House Joint Memorial 14 really addresses the problem of access to health care for rural veterans, and it's becoming an increasing problem. Right now, veterans many times in these areas have to travel miles, hundreds of miles and hours to get access to care, which they have the ability to get care right in their own communities. But this knowledge, these programs that would provide this care is not getting out to them. In fact, Congress has already passed over $9 billion in two programs to fund this kind of care called patient-centered community care and choice. And unfortunately, the veterans don't know that they have access to these kinds of programs. We are, in this resolution, asking the VA to release information with regards to how many veterans veterans are actually accessing these programs and bringing attention to the problem and just building awareness in the provider community as this is an option for veterans that they're not seeking it. Right now, House Joint Resolution 14 has bipartisan support and no organized opposition. And I can tell you personally some heart-wrenching stories of veterans in Central Oregon. One, for example, who has service-connected brain cancer, who routinely would have to travel to Portland 4 hours over a treacherous mountain pass for a 15-minute appointment, another time to get an MRI back and forth with little kids at home, and just not necessary. Not only does this treatment exist in Central Oregon, but also the funds are available there through these programs, but they're not aware of them and they're not getting access to it. So I'd encourage your support of this joint resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you for bringing this forward to us. I mean, we continue to have interesting dialogues and reception from the federal VA, just simply getting our own people who live in Portlandia to do their job is sometimes a little remarkable that we're unable to do that.
Yeah.
So, Madam Vice Chair, question?
No, this has been an issue that we've discussed ad nauseum over the many sessions, previous sessions. I wish that the feds would make a decision that they would reimburse any provider in the rural area to see a veteran rather than they have to actually going to a VA center.
Yeah. Exactly right, and that's what these programs do. And the money's already been allocated, set up. They're just not allowing the veterans to enter the programs. They're not making it apparent to them. They're not making it easy, and the programs are already up and implemented and fully funded. So it's a real puzzler to me why these programs aren't taking off. I think it's just intransigence of the VA medical system to allow the veterans to escape the system to get care close to home.
Well, we're leaving millions and millions of dollars on the table back in Washington, D.C. that could be used by our veterans here in Oregon.
That's a great point. I mean, especially providing more jobs in rural areas for health care providers.
Well, Brother Blunt, as Senator Hass says, I'm not the Boy Scout. My observation is that there are people in the federal government, even though they passed the law and they want to try and do this, that they intentionally don't do this so that then they can turn and say, well, the money wasn't all used and we want to end the programs. We see a constant flow of communications out of the federal Congress and the federal administration in which they want to cut the corners, cut veterans' benefits, cut retirement benefits, cut TRICARE. Cut, and then stand with the state for straight face just before the 6 o'clock news broadcasts their latest debacle.
Yeah,
and it's just unfortunate that again, in order to get the local people to do what they ought to be doing, we have to go to Washington D.C. when you would think they live in the same communities. They like to say that, but anyway.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee will recall a committee bill out of this committee, very similar, urging support for the Office of Rural Health for veterans, rural veterans in particular, SJM 11, moved out earlier in the session.
Right. Any other questions? Senator, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the resolution, Representative Bueller. Can somebody help me here? I need to visualize things. So we've passed a lot of legislation this session and last session to help veterans access, right? The volunteer bill, remember the volunteer bill I carried on the floor recently where we have our county veterans officers, and I don't know how many, we have our state veteran officers. Okay, so I don't quite understand this, how this works. So you have St. Charles Hospital, right? Been a great hospital. Truly, they know how to do it. They have MRIs, right? So you're telling me that, and I'm not looking for problems here. I support the resolution. I just don't get this. So we have a veteran that lives, I don't know, I guess if you lived in John Day or that area, it'd be closer to come to St. Charles or something, or even in that area.
Yeah.
They can't do that now. They can't come and get an MRI in St. Charles Hospital in Benham, one of the great hospitals.
Well, very interestingly, President Courtney, is they can. It's approved, but they're just not letting the veterans know they have that option. It's even worse than that. So they've actually already passed the legislation, already set up the program. They're just not getting the information out and also signing the contracts with the providers, for example, with St. Charles, to allow them to bill the VA to pay for the MRI. So basically, this resolution just compels the bureaucracy to do to follow the law that's already passed.
Yeah. So can I just, let me do this slowly, because you all have a volume of knowledge. So we got, if Cameron Smith was here, why wouldn't we say to Cameron Smith, I like Cameron Smith, or do you have a veterans office in Dushu Commonly? Why aren't they telling them, you're telling me, they're not telling them they can go to St. Charles. I don't understand. I'm lost.
It's the federal government. It's a disconnect. This is the federal government here. So what is happening is the Federal Veterans Administration in Portland isn't sending the information out, even to the point where the 36 veteran service officers in the county have the information to know how to process it. So if the veteran was in rural, we'll say La Pine, your example, and he wanted to go in, if the federal VA would send out all of the information through our veterans, federal to state, then our local VSOs would have the information and how to process it. So when that veteran knew it, we'd have to go through the process. It's the federal who's not giving us the information. So they're not giving the state the information. It's not Cameron. It's the federal government not giving us, not publicizing what the rules are and anything else like that. So unfortunately, to find out if you're in La Pine that you could get this benefit, you got to travel to Portland, to the VA hospital, find out there that you could have had it done back over there had you come there and then got approval and then gone back, which is just stupid. That's the problem.
Okay, just one last thing, not trying to cause any more trouble here. Cameron Smith's a pretty smart guy. Why wouldn't I? Surely Cameron Smith, and they would know about, I can't talk about the feds, but don't they know?
They had the same problem, Mr. Chair, Mr. President, communicating with the feds. You remember, we have invited, in the last two sessions ago, we invited the Veterans Administration, federal people, to come down here, and they came down, they gave a brief, they wanted to work for it. Then the directors changed, and we invited them down the last legislative session, and they said, no, we don't deal with you people in the state. We don't talk to you people in the state. So the last communications that we've had with the federal VA as a committee level is they don't want to talk to us.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Bureau, for bringing this. I'm still very confused, but I'm sure it's me that's confused.
So. It's a puzzle. It's even worse than that. The VA Medical Administration has actually even signed contracts with third-party administrators to go out and sign contracts with providers, and they're just not doing their job. They're not going out and signing up St. Charles Hospital and other providers to provide this care in the rural areas. It's supposedly a well-developed program that no one is actually implementing. It's a puzzle to me also. I've never seen anything like it.
Welcome to the legislature. Representative, this is your freshman year. Welcome to the legislature. Other comments or questions?
I have a question on my elbow, but
later.
No, later.
Other questions? Sir? Yeah. Okay, thank you, Bruce. I think you've been over before. I mean, we have public hearing this week. It'll be scheduled for work session next week.
Great.
I mean, maybe we can put a big rock on this and send a copy of it to Portland VA and they'll fix this.
Actually, we plan to take it back to D.C. and hand deliver it to the VA administration. So I don't know if it'll get filed with the rest of our joint resolutions, but we're going to give it a go.
Okay. Well, thank you for your effort and thank
thanks
you for
lot.
Helping
thank
the veterans.
Thank
with
you.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing
Mr.
on.
Chair.
Oh, Mike, you want to talk? Please. Please do. We're likely to be gone by the time he gets here.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the Oregon political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, and we, of course, support this. It shouldn't make any difference where a veteran came from. A veteran is a veteran, like a rose is a rose, and they should get adequate health care. John Boehner from the Federal House, they just passed the budget for defense, and it gives $612 billion annual military spending. And he says, whatever our troops need to get the job done, they should get it, which to me includes the idea that they should have adequate health care when they get out of the military. Thank you. I'll answer any questions that there might be.
Questions, Mr. Sullivan?
We thank you. Thank you for your continued support of veterans. Colleagues, once again, this particular House Joint Memorial 14, we'll bring it up next week. Representative Wisnett might actually pop in, so we're just going to recess this public hearing and move on to the next, don't go anywhere, the next public hearing. So we're going to recess HJM 14, and we're going to open up our last public hearing, which is House Joint Memorial 18. If you would, please, counsel, and then I believe you are signed up, Mr. Solomon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 18 urges Congress to change funding of veterans health care from discretionary entitlement to permanent and direct entitlement. I would point out for the committee, this is a familiar joint memorial. The Legislative Assembly has sent this message to Congress about the importance of consistent and reliable funding for veterans health care going back 6 years, with three previous House joint resolutions, HJM 21 in 2009, HJM 18 in 2011, and HJM 9 in 2013.
Thank you, Chair Boquist and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the Oregon Political Director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, and I am here also as a veteran. Before I begin my testimony, I would like to thank Representative Esquivel and his wife and chief and staff, Jan, who bailed me out and made sure that this bill came to you today, this memorial. I also want to thank this committee for their fine work in the testimony we just heard in the other memorial. Too bad the federal government doesn't act in such a manner. I would like to share some of the history on this memorial. When I started working for AWPPW in 2005, I found out that the committee, the Veterans Committee, hadn't met in roughly 50 years. I went up to the Legislative Library and Librarian Rob, you know, ferreted the information for me, and it turned out the last time the Veterans Committee had met in Oregon was 1963. So it was really 42 years, but a lot of Korean, Vietnam veterans were dropped out of the system. This explains why then Chair Representative Don Nelson tried to push through 156 bills, which I know Senator Boquist will remember as he served on that committee. Bills then, I don't know what they cost now, was $1,000 a pop. So Dave Hunt and Representative Boquist were asked to pare down these 156. But you have to understand the merits of Chair Nelson. She realized that there was a lot of work to be done. In one of the years that this memorial came up, Steve Lanning, then, who worked for the AFL-CIO, said to me after the meeting, I should explain that Chair Nelson had all veterans stand up in the committee and the audience applauded them. Afterwards, talking to Steve, he said no one had ever thanked me for being a veteran. He, like I, served in the Vietnam War. This memorial concept came from an article that I read in the Disabled American Veterans magazine, and I gave it to Representative Nelson, and that's how it came about. A mandated direct funding would allow the VA to project out further the needs and let them know how many doctors, nurses, technicians, and the like they would need on a discretionary budget. It's harum scarum. In 2011, when I came before this committee, Vice Chair Mons Anderson asked me if I heard anything from the federal government. No. And even to this day, there's been nothing that way. So I submitted a letter, which is in the committee materials, in May 5th in 2011, to the director of the Disabled American Veterans, and no answer. As the DAV slogan goes, all gave some gave all, and you know, all of them collectively gave something. I think it's only fair and proper that the best health care go for those who chose to stand up for their country when there was a need. This country has no problem buying hardware. We saw a lot of it across the street last week. But you have to be concerned about the software, the human. So it's passed five sessions in a row unanimously in both chambers. I would hope that the same result will happen. You know, I think it might be a good idea if the Chair Boquist and Chair Lively send a joint letter addressing will you please answer this question? I don't really have anything more to say unless there are some questions that I may answer, try to answer.
Just thank you for always being here and being such a great representative for our veterans.
Thank you, Senator.
And thank you for your service. And again, thank you for, I mean, you and Bill both have consistently been here looking out for veterans, even when the room's been empty. Which there's a lot of people who came back from the Vietnam War who came home to empty rooms. So it's about time we, you know, caught up with the things we were supposed to do.
On a passing comment, Chair Boquist, in the United States Navy, I wasn't ashamed of my uniform, but the airport scene was such a debacle. I changed out of my uniform in a plane in flight. I'd hate to try and do that today.
You might get arrested. If there's no questions, then we're going to we'll schedule this for work session next week. We're going to close the public hearing on HGM 18. Madam Vice Chair, I would entertain a motion to suspend the rules to reopen 2645B for the purposes of allowing Senator Courtney to vote. Oh, well.
I move that we suspend the rules to allow Senator Courtney to vote on 2645.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanderson is suspending the rules to allow Senator Courtney to vote on 2426A.
Excuse me.
2645. 2645.
B.
Right? Which is the top of the list. How do you vote?
I'm voting yes.
We want to keep our record down.
Yeah, but I need to start paying attention. I should have been down here earlier. I apologize. There's no reason to be. I'm mad at myself. I just need a reminder. When you get older, you need reminders. Alan, don't be looking at me strangely. Like, you need, you're 35, so you don't understand yet, Alan, what I'm saying. But I need a reminder. I'm so mad at myself.
Oh, Mr. President, we generally call that staff.
Yeah, I know. I have staff, but they remind me of cookies and things like that, and those kind of things. You know, cookies. You know, cookies are my many weaknesses in life. They remind me of my weaknesses.
Well, sometimes the staff that you have do have sweet cookies against us, and sometimes they're pretty bitter cookies. So,
yeah, I don't get respect. I don't get any respect.
Okay, so the record will reflect that Senator Courtney voted yes, and with that, we're going to
and
close.
Gets no respect.
That's right.
Gets
no respect.
Close that, colleagues. We're going to go ahead and close the original public hearing on HJM 14, and if Representative Wisnett wants to talk next week, we'll give him time to do so. Then, with that, we're closed.
So let me tell you what happened today. So we get up.
That we're closed.
So let me tell you what happened today. So we get up.